And, you know, you're just a lazy bitch. You know, the podcast, the community knows that. I'm not really telling them anything they didn't already know.
TD Gaming Podcast, episode 250, recorded on February 4th, 2012.
Welcome to the 250th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast. I am Jennifer Schomer.
I'm Derek Schomer.
And I'm Don Dunn.
The TD Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, retro games, and a gaming flashback.
All right, this week's gaming flashback, No One Lives Forever, which is kind of
true.
Yeah, it happens to everybody.
Life. Isn't that also a Bond and thing?
Bond, like James Bond?
As in James Bond, yes. As in Aston Martin James Bond? As in Walter PPK James Bond?
Well, slow down.
PPK?
Yeah. Who has the name PPK?
That's his famous handgun, the PPK.
Oh, okay. As long as it's not his name.
Bad name for a handgun, too.
I'm sorry.
Using a water gun.
Yeah.
I will let them know.
The PPK? That's lame. Anyway. Putting PPs aside, No One Lives Forever is a first-person shooter game, video game actually, if you didn't get the difference, it's not a board game, with stealth gameplay elements developed by Monolith Productions and published by Fox Interactive, released on Windows in the year 2000. That was the year that all of the clocks stopped working.
Wow, you know what? That was actually 12 years ago.
Yeah, it was like as a gaming flashback, that doesn't seem right that it has a 2 at the beginning of the date.
I know.
Normally it's like Centipede. Or something crazy, but no. The game is also ported to the PlayStation 2 and Mac OS X, which is epic. Well, not the company, but OS X. A story-driven game
no,
set...
it's Apple.
Damn it. You did it on purpose on the timing. A story-driven game set a story-driven game set in the 1960s, No One Lives Forever has been critically acclaimed for its stylistic representation of the era in the spirit of many spy films, a la 007, maybe?
James Bond.
And television series with a PPK of that decade, as with as it is with humor. Players control female protagonist Kate Archer, who works as a secret organization. Nope, that's not what it says. Who works for a secret organization that watches over world peace. So that's a weird organization to have. Just
no.
Really? You think there's an organization out there? How do you, if people are watching
yeah,
over.
Yeah, that's why we fight with everybody. Because people watching over world
we're
peace.
We're like, you're going to like world peace, damn it.
That's right.
And I'm going to stuff it down your corn. Yes. Okay, fine. Then that's great world peace. The game was a mixture of first-person shooter and stealth game. Most, but not all, missions could be solved in multiple ways, using sneaking to avoid danger or by going in with guns blazing. A stealthy approach could be taken to evade security cameras, guard dogs, and other obstacles. Enemies were aware of the noise made by a player, including footsteps and weapon fire, and they also reacted to footprints in the snow and dead bodies left lying around. The game featured a wide variety of firearms, which could be loaded with different types of ammunition, including standard full metal jacket bullets, dum-dum rounds, and maybe some PPKs that expanded upon impact, and phosphorus-coated tracer bullets that continued to burn upon impact. Silencers and scopes could also be fitted onto weapons. This sounds pretty much like any Metal Gear Solid game.
Yeah, I was thinking Metal Gear Solid as you. Or it could also be that other one. Not
Metal
Ghost
Gear.
Recon, but the other one that they do, Splinter Cell.
Splinter Cell. That was frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So was Metal Gear. All those games get frustrating when you start losing.
You just want to go in and blast them all with bullets.
Yeah, it's like the rogue legendary quest in World of Warcraft.
Oh, just like it.
Anyway, it is very similar. A novel feature by the game was an array of gadgets. Wait, is that what it says? Oh, a novel feature of the game was its array of gadgets, often disguised as ordinary female fashioned objects. So, I don't know. What would that be? Something that looks like a bullet? I don't know. Maybe
something comes to mind, but
something comes to mind. For example, lipstick doubled as various explosives, perfume bottles held materials such as sleeping gas. A barrette also functioned as a lockpick. Sunglasses could be used for photographing evidence and detecting landmines. Of course, that would be the obvious. It's like landmines are very important. And stylish belt buckles hid a zip cord inside of it. You know,
want to keep your legs and arms. They are
in Batman style. Yeah. Well, yeah. None of those devices were what I was thinking of, but we'll go with those. Other over-the-top gadgets included body-removing powder for disposing of incriminating corpses, a robotic poodle.
Sweet. The mob would love that.
Yeah, just to distract guards, you know, you got to have your...
put them in cement. All you need is this little, like, powder. Token.
Oh, are you on the poodle or are you on the corpse
the
disposing?
Corpse disposing.
Oh, I was like, you're really, really excited about the poodle. Well, I didn't know where you're going with this. I thought there was going to be something cool that came out of it. And a rocket launcher disguised as a briefcase, obviously. An ordinary coin could be thrown to confuse enemies, giving the player the opportunity to sneak by without noticing guards. A cigarette lighter could be used as a miniature welder. You know, very miniature. These ingenious gadgets came from Unity Gadget Lab, led by its main inventor and scientist, Santa. Santa's workshop continued work on these converted gadgets and provided Kate. Is it Kate or Cat? What do you think? Probably Cat.
It has an E at the end, so it should be Kate.
Kate? Cat. Kate, whatever. With the these specific items you needed to progress through the game. In various sections of the game, the player could ride a Triumph motorcycle or snowball or snowmobile. Holy Jesus. If the player chose to be sneaky, they could overhear humorous conversations between guard scientists and civilians. Occasionally, the player would engage in conversation with non-player characters. In certain cutscenes, the game used a dialogue tree in which the player could choose between different questions and responses when talking to other characters. The mission in the game was littered with intelligent items like briefcases, envelopes, and manila folders containing textual notes, which often led to humorous side notes in the game. So kind of deja vu style, I think, there.
I'm watching video of it right now, trying to see if I recognize it. I don't think, you know, I do. Is it, I don't think I played it.
Any good graphics? It was 2000.
It was Doom. 2000 appropriate.
Not Doom, the original, but the new Doom. When was that released? That was,
the graphics are very...
World of Warcraft?
No. They're very
Ultima
on par for year 2000.
I can't see, that's the problem. I can't remember any specific games of that genre that come to mind, that, because I don't know, for some reason I can date specific periods of time based on, say, Centipede, Zelda, Mario 3. Yeah, there's
think the original Half-Life.
Okay, that fits. Okay, the original Half-Life, I can see, which, yeah, you know, is, I guess it kind of holds up a little bit. I moved. Special power-ups called gear items were also available for collecting during the game, such as fuzzy slippers, which reduce noise made by movement, earplugs that reduce damage from explosions, and fire extinguishers that protected the player from burn damage, which they do in real life too. The gear, I don't know about fuzzy slippers, but definitely fire extinguishers.
Come on, fuzzy slippers dampen your footsteps.
Yeah, nobody can hear me in the house when I wear my fuzzy slippers. They look like little dinosaurs. The gear items were sometimes located in hard-to-reach areas. At the start of each mission, the player could choose which weapons, gadgets, and gear to take with them. Some intelligence and gear items couldn't be collected on the first playthrough of the game, as necessary gadgets to reach them are not unlocked until later in the game. If the player wanted to collect these items, you had to revisit the missions with the appropriate equipment on a second playthrough. A la game replay value. Add hours to game. Raise price.
Or just come back.
The look and feel of it was so close to Half-Life, I actually did have to look it up to see if it was the same engine, but it is not.
No, it uses Monolith or whatever Monolith.
Yeah, exactly. The Lich Tech engine developed by Monolith. Yep.
Oh, okay. I think I worked on that one once upon a time. Didn't get far with it, though. No One Lives Forever received critical acclaim upon its release, and many reviewers said that at the time it was among the best first-person shooters since the critically acclaimed 1998 game Half-Life. The game was followed by a sequel in 2002 entitled No One Lives Forever 2, A Spy in Harm's Way. Of course, HARM being an acronym. In 2003, a spinoff of the first two games was released entitled Contract Jack. Jack being an acronym. Being a prequel to No One Lives Forever 2, it is chronologically set between the first two No One Lives Forever games. Or is it No One Lives Forever games? It's two plurals. That's kind of confusing. This stands alone. The standalone expansion pack is a shorter game, and unlike the previous titles, its main protagonist is not Kate Archer, but John Jack, which they really need to come up with better names, who works with HARM. The game also focuses on more action gameplay rather than stealth, probably because you can only go so far with the stealth.
People got sick of stealth.
I mean, dude, after a while, I'm a big fan of Metal Gear and the original games, and I played Metal Gear Solid, whatever, on the PlayStation 3. And after you go through, like, a good 50% of the game, you really just want one of those levels where you just have to kill everything just to get out that stress of, like, you can't move.
Yeah. Yeah, the game that allows you to play both sides of that are the ones I always enjoyed. I mean, you could even go so far as to say, like, Assassin's Creed. You know, half the time you're being stealthy, but then when you want to just be a badass, you can.
Right, because in the end, you have badass factor. It's like you're a dude that's like nobody else, and you can kill like 100 guards at a time, right? You can, and sometimes you're being stealth, but then when you screw up, you have to work harder to live. Where in a lot of these games, if you're stealth and you're caught, they're just like, okay, you're dead.
Game over.
You know, Metal Gear, no matter how badass he is, if he gets shot, he's dead. And that's never
anything. Come on, that's realistic.
I know, but if I wanted to be realistic, I'd go stealth around the neighbor's house.
Really?
You do that?
Well, yeah, no, because I don't want to be realistic. I want to be able to shoot like lightning bolts out my ass and shit. Like I want to do something different. I don't want to be. That was a quote I think from Braveheart. Yeah, I went Braveheart on that one. Actually, it's fireballs. Lightning's come out of his eyes, I think.
I don't remember. We haven't watched that in a long time. We used to watch that all the time.
We should crank that on. It gets
got an off topic now.
Oh, that's what we do. Which is why we're going to get on topic with some game news.
Oh, do I have to read this one?
Why? You don't like your eye? Oh, you love to deal with the hosts and CEOs of other companies.
Especially Japanese companies.
It's an easy one.
Hooray.
No, I would go.
Hooray!
Sony could be facing serious trouble. Yeah, hooray would be bad.
Especially for them right now.
This is from Eurogamer. In stark contrast to what me worry statement by Sony chief financial officer, or, I don't know, some dude with a name.
Mr. Kato.
Sure. Dismissing the shockingly low sales of the Vita in Japan, newly promoted CEO of Sony, Kaz Hirai, has stated that Sony was in serious trouble. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Hirai stated, "I thought turning around the PlayStation business was going to be the toughest challenge of my career, but I guess..."
Oh, sorry, my I-beam.
I'm like, what is that word? But I guess not. It's one issue after another. I feel like...
Holy shnikes!
Now what? Earlier this week, Sony announced an enormous 1.3 billion UK pounds loss for the last financial quarter and expects to report a loss of 2.9 billion for the full year. That will be its fourth consecutive year in the red.
So that ain't good.
No.
Never good. This comes shortly after...
Kato?
Sure. Isn't that like...
I said Kato last time.
Good at this. You should do a podcast.
Yeah. Kato.
Had stated earlier in the day that despite the Vita... What is the Vita?
Vita is a mobile PlayStation portable next-gen device. Sort of.
Selling only 18,000 and 15,000 units in its fifth and sixth weeks after launch, we do not think we have any problems.
Wow. You know, the thing is, they might want to start looking at their marketing department because I've never even heard of this thing.
That's true. I do a different gaming podcast that I can't get my way out of, so I've only heard through there. But it's not something they wonder why they can't sell.
It's only in Japan, isn't it?
No, I don't really know. I think it's here now. But even if it's not,
Japan at the top, so that could be a good reason why we don't know about it.
But no, it's not, because we knew about Nintendo when it was in Japan. It's the internet. If Japan releases something, the worst case scenario is we should know like 12 hours later. It gives you a prediction.
They definitely are doing their job wrong, because if it comes out in February and I haven't heard anything about it, then where are their marketing?
Well, they can't afford marketing because
they're in the red.
They're in the red. I mean, well, that's the problem with certain companies is you have to, you know, spend money to make money. But some people don't like that. They don't want to spend that much money, especially when you look at 4 years or whatnot of consecutive fail. You look at all the problems they had with marketing their crap with the PlayStation 3 when it all went really downhill and all this other stuff. They basically had to put all their chips in and be like, okay, let's make the Vita a success by doing whatever it needs to be. But think about it. A handheld device by Sony. Who else makes a handheld device? Everybody? Every phone?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so it's supposed to connect apparently with the PlayStation and do great things, which nobody apparently has in the U.S. And when you do the math, if it's failing or doing not that great in everywhere else and it's going to come here, it's going to do equivalent, I think. It's going to do mediocre. We'll sell, I'm sure. We have a lot of people. But everybody's got phones now.
So this is like the next gen PSP?
Yeah, this is like the thing that's supposed to... I don't know. It's just the thing that...
So let me ask you this. Has it worked? When Apple came out and said, you know, the iPhone, the iPad, this is the next, you know, big gaming platform, everybody kind of laughed. Have you seen how many copies of the DS Nintendo has sold? But wasn't the 3DS, couldn't you say that was kind of a flop?
You can say that.
So yeah. It was a joke, but my God, is it true?
I think it's true.
I think the problem is
not just Apple necessarily. I mean,
I was using them as an example, right. but
they're a good example because
right. That's they are a good example because the iPod, it started with the iPod that just played music, and then all of a sudden the iPod Touch came along, and it's like, oh wow, look at all this crap I can do.
And on top of which, you can get not necessarily the same caliber, but for $200, you can get the Kindle Fire. And it's a little sluggish, but it plays Angry Birds like any other device does. So you won't get the games that you can get on a Sony product or on a right. Nintendo product, but you get them for 99 cents or sometimes right. free. So I think nowadays we think, hey, you know what? I can get 700 free games, and if they only all keep my attention for an hour, that's still better than spending 30.
See, now if personally the gaming I play now, if you look at it by the amount of hours I play, the majority of my time is spent on a laptop, on a PC. But if you go by the number of different games I play, the iPhone wins.
Because you have variety, and we could be as ADHD about it as we want to.
Right, exactly.
And the minimal cost that goes into it, as opposed to having to go to... First off, if I want to buy a new game, or if you send me an instant message, you're like, dude, you have to check this game out, I could just go, okay, flip to my device and check out, you know, the game. If you tell me, oh, there's this great new Zelda game that's out, I have to remember what the name is, I have to get to the store, and I have to pay four times as much.
Right.
So...
Well, technically, you could go to Amazon.
I could, but
you still have to wait.
You still have to wait. And then you get it. I don't know. For some reason, when I buy games on Amazon, it's like if I buy a game, I want it now. But at the same time, I would rather not buy the game than drive to the store and pick it up. Like,
even the PC nowadays, I don't go buy to stores to buy games for the PC. I just expect I can download it.
Yeah, if you can't download, it's not worth my time.
Right.
And I think that that's what these guys are going to run into. It's not worth their time to sell hardware that nobody wants when we have hardware that sits in our pocket that's a half as powerful but so much cheaper.
So can we make the prediction now that, you know, we'll see a new generation Xbox, we'll see a new generation of something from Nintendo, but we won't see another PlayStation?
No, I think we'll see a PlayStation.
Well, at least in one more iteration. And if that one goes nowhere, then I would think they may want
to... the well's got to dry up at some point.
Yeah, well, I think more for Sony, this device and the next generation, if there is one, is going to come down to the board. You have people that expect financial success from a lot of their divisions, hopefully all of their divisions. And at some point, you're going to have to say, look, we've been trying this gaming thing that you guys over there keep saying is really awesome, but we're not seeing anything come out of it except for negative press, hacks, and it's like... What if we just cut the ties right now? How much will we lose as a company if we stop making a console? They're not really... I don't think they look at it from the standpoint of all those great games that will no longer be created. You know, no more Metal Gears, no more of this. No, they're just thinking, bottom line, how much do we bleed before we just go, you know what, guys? It was nice that you developed this division and you supported it, but we don't want
to
do it anymore.
Time to cut off the arm.
Yeah, I mean, it's bleeding.
That's right. It's going to kill us.
Tourniquet, bitches.
You cut it.
I don't know. So I say maybe they'll have a next generation. If they don't, they'll just get out.
Yeah, but I don't know if they should have a next generation portable.
No, stop with the portables. You've lost until you create a phone that's as sexy as the iPhone.
Take Two CEO states, strong becomes stronger with next generation transitions. This is from Strategy Informer. Take Two has, quote, never been in better shape, according to company boss Strauss Zelnick. And he states the company has also never had more important franchises than ever before. Zelnick stated Take-Two had to be thoughtful about how they managed their portfolio when new next-generation platforms started up because of the low install bases. It was a little premature to worry too much about low sales at the beginning of a console cycle. The boss believes Take-Two is in the best position it could to be financially to find it. Yeah, you know, money to barrel heading into the next gen wave of platforms. Quote, from a financial position, the company has never been in better shape to invest. And from an intellectual property position, the company has never had more important franchises than we have now. The next super release from Take-Two will be Rockstar Games Grand Theft Auto V.
I'm going to go with 5.
No, it's V.
Okay.
Okay. Which is likely to release on the 360, the PS3, and the Nintendo Wii. Wii U PC?
That's no, a new Wii.
Wii U PC will hopefully arrive.
There we go. On the fly edits. That's better. On the Wii U. Period. PC will hopefully arrive soon after.
So, Don, you still like the Grand Theft Auto series?
I love the Grand Theft Auto series.
But did you buy any of the expansions? Or whatever the hell?
No. Either no, I didn't. Yeah, you said you bought one.
Yeah, it was so long. That game's been out for so long. It feels like I didn't. But
I remember you at least bought one.
I think I bought the first one. Yeah, because it had the motorcycle people. I wonder if I read that.
You did.
It was pretty good.
You said you played it for a little while, but you didn't finish it.
That happens with pretty much all the Grand Theft Auto for me because I can only...
Really? I have finished every one I've bought.
I think I finished... Didn't I? I don't know. I think I may have finished the latest Grand Theft Auto. I'm going to say Ivy. but I don't remember. And I think I did 2. But I don't play them through again. And the only way it keeps me playing is if I don't get majorly distracted by anything else and the storyline's good enough. Because for some reason with those games, I kind of actually like the story and that part of the game kind of draws me in. Side quests I do and all that. And I mean, you would think there's only so many times you want to run and crash into people.
But. Yeah, but you know what? It's kind of like the next one will come out, and it's been so long since I've played the last one that it'll seem new to me again.
Right. And that's why I don't remember how many expansions there, because these guys are talking Wii U, which I haven't read anything on, so I don't, I mean, it's supposed to be better than Wii, but I mean, it's the 360 and the PlayStation 3. I don't think it's going to compete. So if it came out on the 360 or the PlayStation 3, I would probably go with the 360. And these are next gen.
Really? You always go with the PS3.
I do? Not for Grand Theft Auto.
Better graphics.
Yeah, but for...
Well, you didn't have it last time.
That's true. Okay, I don't really know what I do.
So you're a liar.
I think I'm still going to go with the 360, but just because I can talk to it now. I don't know if...
The 360?
You can talk to the PS3 as well. It just won't do anything.
Right, that's true.
It'll just look at you.
But I don't see... like with this story, I don't know...
But it's nice. Actually, the story's nice.
Why is it? Wow.
Because
it's nice that we can rank. Can you do a like on this story on Facebook or something? What do you mean? It's nice.
Because Take-Two was like really, really down and out of it, weren't they?
I can't remember. Yeah, I think they were. Yeah.
They were bleeding and they were thinking about cutting off their arm.
But
now they're coming back.
Well, no, but what if they cut it off and cauterize it? Now they're better.
Maybe. Maybe they have one less arm.
But
and they've gotten into stem cell research and he's growing it back.
That's good. It works.
Okay, so but from a standpoint of Take-Two learning, I think by now they should know. But and I'm sure with every console release, you have the same fears. And the first person who puts, you know, there's some success and some losses. If you decide I'm putting everything in, I'm gonna go back to the poker thing, right? It's all in on this next console. That's where we're going. Screw all the stuff we've done. This is where we want to go. We're laying everything right down, and this is it. If the console dies, so do we. And if it becomes a phenomenal success, you do really well. But the risk is big. So if you can put more strategy into it and say, stuff's not going to sell right away, the hardware manufacturers know it. We should know it too. It's software. It works with everything. So, I mean, you can only sell as much as the hardware sells.
Right. It's an adoption rate.
And
in the very beginning, usually it's expensive and there's not a high adoption.
As long as they're smart, like in the, you might not have as much company as like the EAs where you're like, just whatever, we'll just put it out everywhere.
We'll put out Madden 954.
There you go. Well, speaking of Madden 954, let's move on to the developer Starbreeze. Fears Syndicate may be too hard. This comes from Strategy Informer.
I hate games that are too hard.
So do I, like Mega Man. Starbreeze is proud of their... That is Starbreeze. Yep, Starbreeze is proud of their first-person shooter remake of the classic Syndicate, but the developer is worried that they have made the game too hard. According to Starbreeze, the game is so hardcore that it can't be played by as a typical shooter. Blazing away will result in fail. according to the epic lead fail? Epic super epic fail.
Awesome.
Hardcore epic fail. According to the lead co-op programmer Lars Magnus Lang, quotes, we're in constant fear we made it too hard. It's hardcore in the aspect of if you try to play as a shooter straight on, it will be really hard. Well, that'll do it. You need to take a different approach from other shooters where you would try to really incorporate and heal and revive each other, almost like an MMO experience. Okay.
Hey, there was a game like that.
You what?
A first-person shooter MMO.
Oh, yeah. There was?
Yes.
Didn't come out. Game...
there used to be a thought of a game like that.
Yeah, I don't think it ever happened. The game doesn't even have an easy difficulty setting. Rather, the game is divided up into stars. 1 star is normal, 2 star is hard, and 3 star is insane. Lang warned, 1 star, we don't want to call it easy because it's not easy. So instead, we said, let's start at normal. There's no easy difficulty. 3 stars is really tough. We can complete 3 stars in the office when QA play. But in 2 days, there will be a player that will be better than I am in this game. That's for them, the ones who want the really tough experience. According to Lang, the single player campaign will more or less be a tutorial for co-op play, which is where a good chunk of the game's lifespan will be. Quote, we have a progression system in there. If you want to unlock everything, you will have to play 80 to 100 missions and complete them successfully. That will probably take about 50 hours, maybe more. It depends on how good you are.
See.
Not a good idea.
No, you have to have...
Depends how hard the missions are. Like, if it's like, take out the trash and do the dishes, those will go pretty quick. But if it's like, kill the president, that'll take a little bit longer.
Yeah, I don't know any game that makes me do the dishes, but I think that...
That's actually in the next Grand Theft Auto V.
Awesome. Dish cleaner. And you get to kill them and then take their dishes?
Yes.
And then drive off
their wife.
Whoa, sweet. I'm loving this Grand Theft Auto V. I think that what they're describing is pretty much the 1980s of video games. Has anybody ever played Street Fighter? I played on 1 star and I just got it handed to me. And this was like on one of those, the Xbox live download that they had. Those games are hard. And back then, I had a lot of time to master it. And I tried. And Ninja Gaiden, that was not easy. There were so many games that were really difficult to play. The difference was it was a smaller market.
Can you think of any games that you got played and it just, the single player game kicked your ass so hard you actually stopped playing it?
Most games.
Any game that kicked my ass that bad, I stopped playing.
For me, it was Warcraft 3.
Warcraft 3? Dude, you know what's... Yeah, in that game, it's like you feel like you're doing so well, and then all of a sudden you get like just pummeled by millions of people. You're like, okay, so I didn't do as good as I felt like I was
doing.
And
I hate when you lose right at the end. Like in games like that where you build up or tower to...
Oh, you kidding me? I think I lost on level 1.
Well, no, but I mean, where you get, you have like 3 hours invested in this game of all your forces and troops that you amass, and then all of a sudden it's just like, bam, you're dead, wiped out.
Well, the problem here, and I think back then it was different because it was like, do you want to play this really hard game, this wicked hard game, or this other wicked hard game? Today, people have brought it down a little bit because, let's face it, the market's huge. You want game adoption. You don't want reviewers saying this game is so hard because that means 80% of the players are never going to play it.
People like me aren't going to play it.
And then out of the last 20%, 10% of them will buy it and go, this is way too hard for me. And the other 10% won't even try. And then there'll be, maybe 9. And then there'll be that 1% are like, this is the best game. This is where real games come in. This is hardcore. This is the way it should have been. Right? But the problem is, back then, you got a lot of sales. There wasn't as much global reviews to read.
There were no blogs.
There was no blogs. And so you could get sales on a game like this, and people respected it for its difficulty. With the market is today, if you want to make money on a game, you got to give somebody some slack to work with and then build them up to something that's difficult if they feel like it. But people should be able to complete a game on easy or normal and feel like they got a good workout, if you will. And if they want to really be hardcore, let them flip on the hardcore bit. But come on.
Yeah, Starbreeze.
So Starbreeze, you're making an epic fail. Just like as hard as you said it was going to be, it's going to be even harder to sell.
Yeah.
Oklahoma.
Yeah.
State rep wants 1% video violent. Yeah, let's try that again.
Wow, you just hacked that pretty bad.
Yeah.
GameSpot hates
you. I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah.
I want you to do the whole musical thing again and take two.
Yeah, if you can't start with at least the Oklahoma dance.
Oklahoma.
There you go.
State rep wants 1% violent video game tax. That's lame.
The 1%
people
of
down
what?
South are retarded.
Oh, and there goes half the audience.
And check.
This is from GameSpot.com. Oklahoma State Representative Will... Four killer, really?
Oh, dude,
come on.
Okay, stop right there.
Pause.
This is the guy who wants a 1% violent video game tax. His name has killer in the name.
He's got killer.
He does it four times, dude.
Dude, he's like, that's, first off, if this is
okay.
Go against, you need to change your name.
So this dude, you know, brought it to Oklahoma's hill, you know, and he walked out into the, you know, the house.
There's no
hill. And said,
it's all flat.
That's metaphorically speaking.
Oh, okay.
And he said, you know, I'm here to talk about HB 2696. My name is Rep. Four Killer.
Yeah, you're right. It's not going to sell very well.
And the basis of HB 2696 is a 1% violent video game tax. You can't tell me that other people in the room didn't snicker.
I did. I would have.
If the bill is signed into law by Republican Governor Mary Fallon...
Dude, what is with these people's names?
Fallen Four Killer.
Fallen Four Killer.
She should marry him and then keep her name and put the hyphen.
All games sold in the state rated teen, mature, and adult only would be charged a 1% excise tax beginning as early as July 1st.
So
the money collected from the tax, according to the bill, would be given to Oklahoma's Obesity Fighting Childhood Outdoor Education Revolving Fund.
What?
Wow. That's one heck of a
C-O-E-R-F.
The CORF. The CORF.
Bullying Prevention Revolving. What is with revolving funds?
Meaning when the money goes out, it comes... I don't even know how that works. Wait a minute. So they're going to fund violent... They're going to fund...
Wait, they're going to fund
fat
bullying.
People with... Well, I'm guessing this
they're
is
fund
anti-fat bullies.
Bullies
with violent
they're
video
They're going
games.
To try to make fat bullies skinny.
Oh, but that should have been the headline. You'd get so many more clicks, GameSpot, had you done something like that.
Four Killer gets the fatties.
Right. There you go.
Four Killer said it was inspired to draft the bill because he was inspired to draft the bill because he had witnessed obesity violence. See?
Oh wait. So
obesity, comma violence, not just obesity violence.
Obesity. I was like, you're right, because I'm thinking like fat on fat, like killing. Never mind. I guess I'm way off. You got to use your comments correctly.
I didn't want to.
Okay, fine. Don't use them then.
Have these people ever seen sumo wrestling?
That's pretty violent.
All right. Four Killer said he was inspired to draft the bill because he had witnessed obesity, violence, and bullying throughout his time as a teacher, coach, and registered nurse. He's a nurse. He's right. A Four Killer nurse.
Right.
He's
nurse like, Four Killer.
This dude has issues from his childhood.
I think
that's
so.
That's right. And that's why he wants to tax people now.
Probably got red hair.
According to Four Killer, a gentleman shot a police officer and stole his car. Grand Theft Auto. He had been playing Grand Theft Auto. See? Not everybody is going to react the same, but I believe after hours and hours of watching the screen, playing the video game, being that person, and taking on that role, people get...
Desensitized.
Desensitized. Four Killer also attacked Rockstar Games' bully. Of course.
Well, yeah.
Four Killer said the aim of HB 2696 is not to bring down the video game industry or to eradicate teen, mature, and adult-only titles. He said the initiative is an effort to bring awareness to the matter of violence in video games. But it's only going to be people in Oklahoma that are aware.
Right. Oh, yes. So
are they going to start taxing movies that are rated R as well?
That would be a good question.
No, because those are only an hour long. This is hours after.
Yeah, this is training for
That's
killing.
Right.
It's different than entertainment.
And it's not even a matter that it's a 1%. It's This opens the door to ridiculous legislation like this.
But still, it's 1%. Okay, so let's say they did it.
In Oklahoma, nobody cares.
But I understand that. But let's say they did it, right? They put that 1% tax in there. then how is that really going to bring awareness? Do they have to put it on the label every time that there's this 1% tax and we're doing this and you're funding the skinny initiatives?
I don't know. Maybe when it goes out. Yeah, I don't know. According to Oklahoma State Legislator information page regarding HB 2696, the bill will be read before the House on Monday, February 6th.
So,
John, you can actually speak up, dude. You don't have to just type.
Apparently, it was shot down in California, a similar bill.
So, unconstitutional.
So if it's unconstitutional there, it's going to pass in Oklahoma.
Yes, because Oklahoma is backwards.
Right.
And it's in
dude, the you can only have like 4% alcohol by volume in your beer.
Let's move on. I don't even want to give this story any more time.
All right. Yeah, you know, that's probably a good idea.
Ubisoft cuts off legit players with DRM server migration. This is from techdirt.com. When Ubisoft takes its DRM servers down to migrate them on February the 7th, gamers who paid good money in order to play DRM games will be unable to do so. Isn't that the hallmark of DRM?
Yes.
In the announcement of the downtime, Ubisoft stated, We apologize to our customers for the inconvenience. This move ultimately will help us improve the maintenance on our infrastructure and deliver better uptime and greatly improve services for our customers. However, the chief complaint of most gamers reacting to Ubisoft's announcement is that while they're unable to play the games they bought and paid for, pirates, whom the DRM is supposed to combat, will play as much as they'd like. Back in March of 2000, Ubisoft's DRM servers crashed, making their games completely unplayable for many while creating lengthy login delays for others. Pirates reported no problems playing the games.
You think pirates really reported that?
Like, there should be a website where the pirates say, game
I'm sure people were like, you know, tweeting, you know, Ubisoft down, I'm doing just fine, wink.
Playing here on my cracked version of the game that I bought legally.
That's the mantra of DMR. DMR.
Nice.
DRM.
Digital management rights. Well, you know, I wish I could say this is the first time the story's happened, but every time it happens, it makes people very angry. And I guess the key takeaway here is that when the servers come back up, everybody stops bitching.
Right. Everybody's
and it goes away. That is why DRM will continue to stay for a while, because people, they only complain when it's an inconvenience. They don't complain enough when it's actually working. So because everybody's happy with it. It's like, I don't know, when you go to a WoW forum, nobody complains.
They can play their game.
Right. But people only complain when things don't work correctly.
Right. Squeaky wheel.
And
I'm still of the opinion, I mean, if there's a game coming out and it has ridiculous DRM and you don't like it, don't buy it. It's just a video game. I'm sorry.
That's the only way to avoid it. And the thing is, it can't just be you. It's got to be everybody.
Right.
Do you remember what was that game? The
Maxis
was
it game
Spore?
Yeah.
I really wanted to play that. I even had talked to my biology teacher wife about the game. Oh, it's a cool concept, evolution, blah, blah, blah. And they had that ridiculous DRM. Never bought it.
No.
Never bought it either.
But now I can only hope that other people did the same thing as opposed to...
Yeah, I don't think it did very well, so...
I don't think it did very well. But and I mean, it is, got lambasted for its DRM.
I think it didn't do really well because it just wasn't really well...
That might be the case.
Well, yeah, it was...
That's the unfortunate part.
Let a game fail on its own merits.
Right.
That's, or lack thereof.
And that's why...
I think Amazon reviews got a hold of it too, and all the DRM and...
I remember when they were like wailing. Yeah. I think they had one star and like all these reviews and... That's the beauty of how the internet works today is people can look at that stuff and go, yeah, pass.
I mean, I understand where they're coming from because, I mean, you want your money for the game that you worked hard on.
Right.
But it's the same old, same old. It's, you know, if people are stealing your game, they're most likely weren't going to buy it to begin with.
I guess what they should have done, and maybe this should be something they should consider for future implementations of DRM for at least Ubisoft, is if you have a server farm and its entire job is to make sure you're buying the game legit, which, by the way, makes me wonder, how much do they spend in uptime of that thing and all the money as opposed to just letting the game go out without serial numbers, but whatever. So if you have a mode where when the servers go down that nobody can play, then you should reverse the mode somehow and say the server is up. Like, leave up some ghost servers, and their entire goal is to say, yeah, it's cool to play the game right now. And that's their job is to just respond with yes, not do any type of any type of real validation and say, look, for the 3 hours of this migration, you own the game, you just play it.
But if they're migrating, I mean, I guess it's not necessarily clear on what they're doing, but if they are migrating to new computers, then theoretically, I know it doesn't work like all the time like that in IT, but it should be you get these computers up and going and you flip your switch.
You have a set of systems and their job is only to be there shielding the migration.
Right.
While the back end systems do all the rest of the work. Because right. You don't have to, during a migration, you don't even have to worry about live data and user accounts because you're just saying everybody gets in. That's it. Everybody's in. If you stole the game and you like literally download it without any cracks, you get to play the game during the migration. That's the penalty we're willing to take. You can play the game for 3 hours, you know, and then deal with it.
But
no, just have the whole thing go down and people complain.
Wah.
For reader feedback this week, we're going to skip reader feedback and we're going to go into the gaming history segment. This week, the gaming history segment is on the Gizmondo. It looks like a little handheld thing.
And it still looks like Gizmodo.
It does look like Gizmodo. I was like, oh, cool. Gaming history on Gizmodo.
Yeah.
No, it's like, I don't know. It's
kind of like the PSP.
It's kind of cute. Yeah. With a nice big screen and it looks like a big
controller.
Well,
a little screen, but a big old thing.
Big old thing in it. It's running OS 10 in that picture. Anyway, the Gizmondo was a handheld gaming console which was released by Tiger Telematics in March of 2015.
I didn't even notice that. You're right.
I saw that, but it's running OS 10.
And it's running back.
It's the dashboard. The electronics design was undertaken by Plextech Limited and the industrial design by Rick Dickinson. The Gizmondo launched with a lineup of 14 titles, including a port of EA's FIFA Football 2005 and SSX 3 and SCI's Richard Burns Rally. A further 30 titles were known to have been in development for the system, but all were canceled before the release due to Tiger Telematics bankruptcy. This goes back and ties into the whole article we talked about with companies having to provide some sort of next-gen. Yeah, you don't bet your company on this. Obviously, now the console was also featured a smart ad system, which was intended as a way for consumers to subsidize parts of the cost of the unit. A smart ads enabled Gizmondo cost less, but would display advertisements in the Gizmondo screen at random intervals when the user entered the home screen of the device. These advertisements would be downloaded via the device's GPS data connection and could be target based on data inputted by the device. A maximum of 3 ads would be shown per day. Some ads would include special offers in the form of vouchers or barcodes, and some would utilize the device's GPS system to direct users to the nearest store carrying the advertised products. However, the smart ads service was never activated, and users who paid the reduced price for the smart ads-enabled device did not receive any advertisements through their device.
Sweet.
So they got a better deal. With fewer than 25,000 units sold, the Gizmondo was named by GamePro the worst-selling handheld console in history. And it's never good to be that guy that creates that device. However, the Gizmondo was overshadowed by the involvement of one of its executives, Stefan Eriksson, a Swedish criminal from Uppsala. He was a leader of a loose criminal organization called the Uppsala Mafia until he began the development of the Gizmondo together with Carl Freer. So, I mean, come on.
So, wait, he left the mob to develop?
Obviously.
How often does that happen?
Well, nobody said he actually left the mob. It's just that he was doing development. I mean, you don't know if anybody leaves.
He was the leader.
Nobody leaves the mob.
He stepped down.
You leave as a corpse, I think. I don't know. That's just what they do in the movies. In 2001, Eriksson joined Freer in the UK-based company Gizmondo, which intended to rival Nintendo and Sony for handheld video game market. Although, now, this was 2005. I don't remember this.
No.
maybe that's why. Through some innovative financial transactions, Freer was able to take a British electronics company into the NASDAQ exchange and raise millions. Eriksson's salary in 2004 was £1.1 million, with bonuses amount of £145,000 and a car allowance of £5,000 per month.
Sweet.
Yeah, my car doesn't even weigh £5,000. In an attempt to promote the product, Eriksson competed at a 24-hour of Le Mans. He entered the race in a Gizmondo-sponsored Ferrari 360 Mondena GTC in 2005, but would retire in the morning with mechanical troubles.
Oh, that should tell you something.
In October 2005, the Swedish paper revealed irregularities in the business dealings with Gizmondo and the criminal past of some of its members of management, including Eriksson. Erickson, Freer, and others resigned, and the company filed for bankruptcy after using up $300 million, 90% of its last in the last 6 months. The company was also involved in various litigations. Swedish Ogilvy Group, MTV, and former Formula One team Jordan Grand Prix all filed million-dollar suits. In August, shortly before his resignation, Gizmondo relocated Erickson to California for its U.S. launch. I don't think you want to take a criminal like this and relocate to California, but whatever.
It was Florida, all just a scam. Maybe.
In February 2006, the company discontinued the device and was forced into bankruptcy. In 2008, founder and CEO Carl Freer announced that he would reach an agreement with the liquidators and plan to relaunch Gizmondo as Gizmondo 2 because the first one was so awesome.
So it was so great that we were not going to do anything to it. We're just going to add a 2 to the end.
Yeah, yeah. And they planned to launch in 2008 of May, but this was quickly pushed back to November, along with details of the new company media power behind the launch, headed by Carl Freer and his Swedish partner, Mikael L. We'll call him we'll go with Lungman. That sounds good. With development apparently proceeding according to the new schedule at least until September. By December 2008, the company had still not appeared, and another announcement was made about the company redesign as a Windows CE or Google Android powered smartphone. I don't see that either. Since then, MediaPower website has gone offline. Co-founder Mikael has been arrested and convicted on serious fraud, and nothing more has been announced about the console or smartphone. Eventually, the Gizmondo 2 had been abandoned.
Fool me once.
So I don't know if that's
all a scam. They just wanted lots of money.
But there's a picture of it. It's got OS 10 in the picture.
Well, you need a picture to get money.
So if you sold $25,000, you're still legit, right? Well, no, I guess there's people who sell donut shops that could be a front end for the mob, and they sell donuts. But yeah, what I think happened is people just thought they had a cool get rich, kind of quick scheme that it failed.
That didn't get rich quick.
And the problem is when you look at the founders of your company and all the people on the board, if you will, and they're all known criminals. There is going to be some financial problems.
Hey, they still gave them money. Apparently, they didn't take a look at who was on the board.
I mean, not to say that somebody who comes out of prison shouldn't be allowed to go get a job, or somebody who's been has some sort of
maybe
thing
someone
on
them. Who's in the mafia shouldn't be allowed to be given money to start a company.
It would be very similar to somebody who has just been released from like Alcoholics Anonymous and they go to become a bartender, right? There's just certain things where you go, wait, what? Where they're
and for any members of the mafia who are listening, I do not agree with any of this. You are awesome people. Just, you know, want to put that out there.
Wuss.
All I'm saying is that they might have made some weird decisions where it may have been more beneficial for them to stay in whatever position they were in prior. Might have been as a hitman or whatever. I have nothing against the mob. It's just leave me alone. That's all. So there you go. Another company that did not make it. A device that
did not make it.
It kind of was a little ugly, but cute at the same way. You know, sometimes handheld stuff just
Apple
doesn't work.
Crushed them.
If anything, could have been. I mean, at the end of the day,
OS 10.
Right. Well, that's true. At the end of the day, if they were able to make something, it would have to be CE or Android, and then it's just a phone.
So if you manage to stick around this long
and not be like, what the hell?
This is, you know, kind of like a joke. Which, well, it's real. It's not a joke.
No, it's a joke. You had it right.
It's a joke.
So we're back. Episode 250. Jonah thought it would be kind of neat to get us all back together and the original me, Derek, Don, and do an episode and not tell you until right now after you've listened to the whole thing flabbergasted going, huh? What's going
what
on?
These people?
So for all the veteran listeners out there who have stuck with it, even though we've left, but you've kept listening here, this is a present to you.
It was, you know, episode 250, it seemed like a fitting thing to do. And although for most of us, I can't speak necessarily for Dom, but life has, you know, been quite busy for us. And the reason we had originally left the show was because our son had leukemia. So we've gotten through a lot of that, but it still maintains a very busy schedule. And we went back to karate and now the kids are doing that. So there's like every day something's going on. So while we can't do a podcast very often, it seemed like a fitting thing to do. But overall, everybody's still alive. We're all kicking and, you know, doing what we used to do, just not on the air. And of course, for the, us three at least, still playing some WoW. Don, you've been missing, so I'm guessing it's because you're playing a little of that Star Wars game.
No, I haven't been playing that. I've been very straight out at work.
Oh, okay. I feel better. That
you've been, but, you, no, I have not abandoned you for.
Oh. What do you think of Star Wars?
It would be better if I had a native Mac client.
Well, yeah, provided that you don't.
it's cool. It's a different. It really is a different experience. Let's be honest. It's basically playing the old single player Knights of the Old Republic, except there happen to be other people walking around.
Oh, see, I haven't heard from,
which is awesome.
Yeah,
because that was a phenomenal game. But I just haven't had time to really enjoy it.
So, in no Minecraft either?
Nope, no Minecraft either. Really, the only game I have been playing is Warcraft when I get the chance to play a game.
Okay, so I don't feel like everybody has abandoned us.
Nope.
Really, just three people. But still, it's like three out of the group of people we have. I was like, oh, everybody's planning to go over there, but I'm not going over there. But apparently...
Well, that's because you don't have a PC.
Some people run into real life and you have to work. Which is sort of like how we're not on here anymore. Real life gets in the way. So hopefully that kind of clears a little bit up and people can now rest assured that it's not an old show that just all of a sudden popped up in your feed. it was for reals. And it's not April Fool's, because I don't really know how April. This could be that April Foolish. Yeah, and it's not April, which is a dead giveaway. So again, I guess, Jennifer, you want to do the out?
Take us out. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We'd enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net.
Also, hit us up on facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum. You can send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. If you're into casual games, you probably don't really need to do that anymore. CasualGamerChick.com, but it doesn't really get updated much because Jennifer's given up.
Because you have life.
Too much going on again.
Yes. It goes back to that same problem.
So,
you know, I'm really tired of you making all these excuses.
I know.
It's like you only have to do it for like 6 or 7 years and you're like, okay. So.
Yeah, that gets all way too much.
Yeah. And, you know, you're just a lazy bitch. You know, the podcast, the community knows that.
Right.
I'm not really telling them anything they didn't already know.
Right. That's like.
Unless you're talking about yourself.
Right. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes. We're still there. Leave us some comments over on iTunes and tell us what you think. Of course, 5 stars, because that's really the only setting.
Yeah, right? They don't have any other stars.
All right. And so how do we usually end this? You say...
See you next week.
Have a good one.
Well, you're not going to see you next week. See, that's the problem there. I'll see you next week. These guys are going away for a while.
Yeah. Screw you.
Good night, everybody.